Okay, so we've got a scrutiny commission this evening. So please note this meeting was recorded and the sound recording subsequently made available via the council's website. In addition, please be advised that under the openness of local government bodies regulations 2014, that other people may film, record, tweet or blog from this meeting. The use of any images or sound recordings is not under the council's control. If you have any queries about these arrangements, please speak to the Democratic Services Officer who is administering this meeting. Okay, so if we're happy to get going. So if we start with agenda item one, so we've got any apologies?
Yes, so we've had apologies this evening, Chair, from Councillor Hunt. She was due to attend as the lead member for one of the Cabinet reports, but she's unable to be with us this evening.
Okay.
That's all we've had.
Okay. So item number two, so we've got minutes of the previous meeting.
Yeah. So, members, this is Karen Widdowson speaking, Democratic Services Manager. I'd like to highlight that under minute number 57, progress with panel work, at the last meeting, it was resolved to appoint chairs to the various panels. I want it to be noted that in the Constitution, it does state that scrutiny panels will be chaired by either the chairs or vice-chairs of the Scrutiny Commission or chairs or vice-chairs of the three scrutiny committees. I have spoken to the monitoring officer and he said it was appropriate that if there were not insufficient number of members to chair those meetings, then that was fine, but I wanted to note it for the minutes. Thank you.
Okay, thank you. So, is everybody happy to accept the minutes from the previous meeting?
Yeah, thank you.
So, item three, declarations of pecuniary and personal interests. Do we have any this evening?
No.
Item four, declarations of the party whip.
Brilliant.
And then item five, so questions under scrutiny committee procedures 11.16.
So no questions have been submitted, Chair.
Thank you. Item six, statutory guidance by overview and scrutiny in local and combined authorities.
Thank you, Chairman. So this is Carrie Widdowson, Democratic Services Manager, speaking. So the report before you sets out for information the statutory guidance which was issued recently by the Centre for Public Scrutiny. The statutory guidance sets out a number of sections around culture, resourcing, members and information. And as I've gone through this document, I've gone through to see if there's any changes that are required to our constitution as a result of this guidance. And I confirm that it is my opinion that no changes are required to the constitution as a result of this guidance. I'd also like to point out that the document is guidance and we should have due regard to it when we are making decisions around scrutiny, I should say making proposals around scrutiny. When I've been looking through the document, I thought it was actually timely that we also reviewed the scrutiny protocol. The last time that the scrutiny protocol was reviewed was back in January 2014, and that's set out on pages 41 to 52. So if I can refer you to those, having looked at the protocol on page 43, there is a section entitled "And General Principles," and I suggest that items 4, 5 and 6 be deleted for the future protocol. That's the only comments and observations I've got. Is there anything, any questions members have? Thank you.
Has anyone got any comments with regard to that?
What's the rationale behind deleting 4, 5 and 6?
So the Cabinet Scrutiny Liaison Group, when this protocol was set up in 2014, I understand there was possibly two meetings of that group. There has not been any future meetings, and also there are other mechanisms in place for ensuring good relations between Cabinet and Scrutiny, and indeed we do have scrutiny lead members do come along to the scrutiny meetings. What I'm saying is that there isn't a requirement to have a meeting per se. There are other mechanisms, informal mechanisms in place. So that was the rationale behind that.
So what page was this again?
Page 43.
Thank you.
I think from my perspective, I kind of support what Ms. Widdowson's just suggesting. I've spoken about it with Vice Chair, and they were something, this scrutiny liaison group was something that I questioned because it wasn't something I was aware of, and obviously it makes sense if it hasn't met since sort of 2014. It shows us that we are doing that in a different way, and I think that we have got sort of good relations with Cabinet as far as how we are liaising with them, the feedback we're giving in Cabinet and feedback we're getting kind of outside of it. I mean, if anyone else has got any comments, but I was happy to support the suggestion.
And just to add, Councillor Draycott speaking, we do produce an annual report every year that will go to full council, and that also will have a chance for both parties to see what we're doing.
Any other comments, Councillor Bailey?
I think it just highlights that we do have everything in place, having read through the guidance as well. It certainly shows that we do have everything in place. So like it's been alluded to already, I don't think there's anything that we're not doing particularly.
Yeah, and I would also add, because we had the Centre for Public Scrutiny came in probably about a year, 18 months ago, I do feel that the scrutiny function, it does reflect quite a lot of the observations and comments in the statutory guidance. Thank you.
Anyone else? Any further comments? Councillor Draycott.
On the report?
Yep.
Yes, please, Chair. Thank you. Two questions first. One on the bottom of page 17, where it talks about the need to ensure a clear division of responsibilities between scrutiny and the audit function. Mm-hmm. I just wonder if that could be explained a little bit more. Obviously, we must have different roles, so what would scrutiny's role be and how would that differ?
So the audit committee has a very clear parameters in terms of reference. So it will, for example, consider the annual statement of good governance, for example. So that would be an example where that audit committee would look at that as opposed to scrutiny looking at that document. So it's very clear which documents should go to audit committee in our constitution. And therefore, it's only right that the audit committee continues to do that rather than a duplication with the scrutiny committees.
Okay, thank you. And then the second was on page 29, the box at the bottom, where it talks about outside organisations that receive public funding. It goes on to say that authorities should consider whether it would be appropriate to include a requirement for them to supply information or to appear before scrutiny committee. I'd welcome what other members of the committee think about that. Presumably it's something that we should go to the procurement officer about. I think by having something in there, even if it's very loose, it does mean in the future that we don't have a whole load of hoops to go through, that, you know, they would know then that they are required to come were the occasion to be needed. So I don't know if that's something that the committee would support. I certainly think it's a good idea.
Anyone with any comments on that? I think from my perspective, I've sat in a performance meeting where Capita were invited to come in and go through issues that had occurred and what they were doing to rectify it, and then they came in 6 months later to then go through all the changes that had happened. And I think it was really useful for us to be able to hear from them directly the work that they were doing to rectify it when there was a problem. So I think it would be useful to have that written in there, that they can be invited in when the situation
requires it.
Yeah.
I think when they're underperforming, I think it's absolutely fundamental.
So Karen Widdowson speaking. So an action from this meeting, we'll approach the procurement manager with a view to a statement to be included in any contract paperwork with appropriate contracts, such as maybe housing is an example one I can think of at the moment, as appropriate, a contract wording be included that they provide information or actually appear at a scrutiny committee as required. I think that would work well, and I will speak to the procurement manager about having something like that in the contract paperwork.
And if we could have a report back on the outcome. Thank you.
Thank you. Okay, are we all, everyone happy with that?
Yeah,
great.
Lovely.
Thank you. So item seven, so we've got pre-decision scrutiny of any specific financial matters to be considered by Cabinet.
So Chair, this will come under item 8B
yep.
on the agenda in regards to the requirement for the planning and regeneration service.
Yep, lovely, so if we move on to item eight.
Yep.
Cabinet items for pre-decision scrutiny. So the first item A, we've got the Tenancy Support Policy 2019 to 2024. We've got Peter Oliver to take us through this one.
Yep, thank you. Homes and Community Agency Consumer Standard Regulations state that landlords shall develop and provide services that will support tenants to maintain their policy and prevent unnecessary evictions. The policy therefore sets out the range and depth of support that's offered to the Council of Tenants in this respect.
Thank you. Has anyone got any questions for Peter about the report?
Yeah. Does what it says.
Yeah. Councillor Bolton.
I don't have a question, but I did want to say that I thought it was a really comprehensive note document, or a report. And yeah, I certainly learned quite a lot from reading it, so thank you.
Any other comment, Councillor Jacob?
Yes, thank you, Chair. At the Housing Management Board meeting recently, we discussed if things remain the same, that Universal Credit will roll out quite big scale from January next year. And the tenancy support team and everybody who's working at the moment on Universal Credit with the software, it's really working. I'm just wondered whether with the large numbers that could come onto Universal Credit, whether anything at the moment is being done to look at possibly needing to expand on this team, because they're going to come under huge pressure if that's the case. So just if there's reassurances that could be given. Thank you, Chair.
In terms of what we've got existing staffing, we've got five officers in the income management team who are doing the recovery aspects of rent collection. Then we've got two financial inclusion officers, their role is set out in this document that you have here, that support tenants to maximise their income and reduce expenditure. We've got one dedicated Universal Credit officer as well. We've put in a budget pressure because that contract was only for 1 year, or the budget was only for 1 year, because Universal Credit's going to roll out over the next couple of years, a little bit later than we originally expected. The expectation is that pace will continue, but that'll be subject to council approval of the budget. We also have four officers in the tenancy support team, including the tenancy support team leader, and I've just completed a decision to recruit a fifth person into that team as well. We've already increased staffing resources because we've known about this for a very long time, since 2012, I think, the original legislation. And we monitor our rent arrears on a weekly basis as well. We'll continue to monitor this really, really closely. Arrears have already increased, and that was expected, and that's very much in line with the experience of other landlords. But if next year, if we require additional staffing resource, then we'll look again at that point and make any adjustments as necessary.
Thank you.
Any further comments or questions?
There was just one thing that sort of caught my eye. You're obviously, as part of the report, it says you're continually seeking to improve the information you hold on tenants, for example. How does that conflict with then GDPR in that respect? And then obviously if people are vulnerable and struggling, how are you going to extract that information? That's quite a difficult part, to extract that information from people that might not necessarily be very forthcoming with it.
So through you, yep, Chair.
Thank you.
So first of all, our privacy notice sets out how we'll use tenants' information. The tenancy agreement also sets out that we will use the information they give us to make referrals for support. And in terms of how we identify people that are kind of from the off, when somebody starts a tenancy with us, we do a tenancy support risk assessment. So we look at any factors that might make them particularly vulnerable, and if appropriate, refer them on to one of the teams as appropriate. And then throughout the life of a tenancy, and it tends to be where issues arise, so for example, the rent's not paid, or for example, if there's antisocial behaviour, or perhaps the condition of the dwelling house has deteriorated, at that point, we will, you know, one of the first checks we'll do is to see if this person needs some support, because you know, the support and enforcement need to be balanced. Generally, the more information that we have about our tenant and their vulnerabilities, the greater our capacity to support them.
Thank you.
Yeah, I've just got one final one. You mentioned to do with the reduction in rent arrears with the implementation of the policy. Have we got an indication or a target of where we're looking to move to?
So my expectation is that rent arrears will increase as a result of universal credit. So we've actually moved our targets upwards. So to give you an indication of that, rent arrears have increased by around £130,000 since October 2018.
Because of the more people moving on to universal credit.
Yeah, because the payments are delayed, so sometimes it takes around 5 weeks or so for somebody to receive the benefit. I expect that the amount will continue to increase as well, until at some point it becomes more business as usual, but that's probably medium term, you know, two and a half years or so, until things start settling down and then coming down the other side.
Okay, thank you. Anything else from anybody?
No.
Are we all happy to recommend this cabinet?
Yes. Sorry, yes.
Yeah.
Great.
Leon? Yeah. And Jeff? Yep, that's everybody.
Brilliant.
Yep, thank you.
Thank you. Thank you, Chair. Thank you.
Okay, so we move on to item B. So we've got 8B, the Environment Planning and Regeneration Service. Richard Bennett.
Thank you, Chair. Richard Bennett, Head of Planning and Regeneration. So this is a report seeking approval for the environmental movement of budget from one cost centre within a single cost centre within the Planning and Regeneration Service. Essentially, we have underspent salary, which we want to use to fund agency workers within the service. The environment of money is entirely within budget, but as a consequence of the Council's financial procedure rules, there's a threshold in which delegated authority can be used for that environment, and over £100,000 it's a cabinet decision. So this report is relatively straightforward in that respect, and it is actually, we've had to do the same last year and the year before that as well. So. Given the nature of the scale of the Planning and Regeneration Service and the cost of agency workers, we do find ourselves tripping over this threshold each year. I would like to draw members' attention to paragraph 5 on page 76. There does appear to be a typographical error in the numbers. I think that should be 147,400 to match the recommendation on page 74. Happy to take any questions, Chair.
Okay. Has anyone got any questions?
Councillor Bolton, it was I who asked for this to come to scrutiny, and having read what was produced, I don't actually have any questions. I didn't sort of understand what it was, but now I do, so I'm quite happy with the...
Any other questions? Councillor Draycott.
Yes, Chair. I think as a starting point, I prefer money to be spent on permanent staff than agency staff. But that's in an ideal world, and I know the difficulties that there is with recruitment and the attraction of the private sector and what have you. We also know the planning department has huge projects and work to do, like the local plan and what have you. So I don't think there's any choice but to go along with this. And it's not the first time, as has been said. But I think as a starting point, it's permanent staff that we should be looking at. But like I say, it's not an ideal world. So as it stands then, I think we should support the recommendations, Chair.
Yeah, I just echo Councillor Draycott's comments, really. I think from my perspective, the one thing that I thought when I was looking at it is it's the amount of time that we've not had permanent staff in those positions. And I understand, obviously, that there's recruitment issues there. But I think I sat in a performance meeting a year ago, not long after I actually started as a councillor, where this came up then as a reason why we were behind. There would have been either an amber or a red indicator that would have kicked off the reason for the topic of conversation, and it was down to the fact that we didn't have permanent staff within that area, and we're a year on and we're still in that situation. So it is a concern, but I do understand that we have to do this because obviously we need to have people in those roles.
Through you, Chair, if I can give the committee some assurance. A few years ago we had 5 or 6 posts which were covered by agency workers, and we've now managed to get to a stage through growing on our own internal workforce where we've been able to fill posts which have been difficult to recruit to, and these are the last few that we're finding really difficult to attract candidates to because of the very specific and expert nature of these roles. But we are continuing to promote these on the jobs market to try and get permanent candidates in. So we're trying to do our best.
Yep.
So it's a better scenario than what we've previously seen.
Good. Any further comments from anybody?
No.
Are we happy to recommend this to Cabinet?
Yes.
Yeah. Thank you.
Thank you.
Okay, so we move on to item 9. So we've got Scrutiny Commission, pre-decision scrutiny, Cabinet response.
Yes, Chair.
I'm sorry, I think you were going to take us through that.
Yes, Chair. So basically this is just a report for the committee to note. It just sets out the Cabinet reports that went before Cabinet last time and their response to your recommendations. So it's quite a short report this time. Just to say that Cabinet, I understand, appreciated all the work that the Scrutiny Commission had done.
Yeah, there was a specific comment from the leader in Cabinet last time that he wanted to specifically thank the Commission and everyone's work that had gone into it last time. We'd had quite a few reports. We'd had the local plan, which was quite lengthy. And they understood the detail that people had gone into in scrutinising it, and he wanted just to express his thanks to everybody.
Yep, so like I say, it's just a report for the committee to note, just to say that obviously Cabinet were happy with the information provided and that Cabinet went ahead and adopted all the officer recommendations that were set out in the reports. That's it.
Thank
Short
you.
And sweet.
So you've got item 10, so progress with panel work.
Yeah, so this is a report for the Scrutiny Commission just to update you on what's happening with the panels. So if you go down, you can see obviously currently we've got the budget scrutiny panel, which is in full flow. We've also just started the generating commercial income and surplus panel, which I understand has had one informal meeting and things are progressing with that one. We've also got the waste services and waste management panel, which is informal and that's ongoing. And then underneath you've got a list of the chairs that were appointed at the last meeting and for which types of panels. And then Appendix 1 just takes you through the panels that we've got listed and where we are with those in terms of when they're starting and timings for the rest of the year. So quite straightforward, Chair.
Yeah, I think so.
I don't know if anybody's got any comments or anything they wish to add about that, or if everybody's happy.
Everyone happy with that as it is now?
Yes. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Brilliant.
Yep.
Good to hear.
Okay, so item 11. So you've got the scrutiny work programme.
Yes. So this is an update for the Scrutiny Commission on the 3 directorate-based scrutiny committees that we have. So it's just a chance for you to review their work programmes and just add any comments if you've got them about what they're up to, or if you want to add or remove any items. One thing I will just bring to the committee's attention, once I can find it, is in regards to the Housing Planning and Regulatory Services Scrutiny Committee. At their meeting in December, they are due to have a report on the progress of the draft local plan. We have been informed, and I'm sure Richard Bennett will give us an update, in that the consultation period is obviously currently ongoing for the local plan and isn't due to be finished until after this meeting takes place. So we're just having a discussion about what we feel is the best way forward. At the pre-briefing we've had, we've discussed about an update coming to the Scrutiny Commission in January now, where the Commission will be able to have an update on the consultation period that's taken place and what the results of that have been. I mean, Richard, whilst we've got you here, does that sound something that's reasonable to you?
Richard Bennett, Head of Planning and Regeneration. Yes, I think that would be my advice to the committee. Trying to provide support to the committee during the consultation period is fraught with difficulty in terms of members potentially predetermining their position on the local plan prior to full council, which will receive a copy of the plan with a view to considering whether to adopt it down the line. So I think our advice would be to bring a report to you later which summarises what's happened through consultation. There could be scrutiny of that process and the effectiveness of that consultation and our response to the issues that have been identified. We think that might is a more helpful process.
Yeah, I think we picked up on this in Scrutiny Commission in our last meeting. Mm-hmm. We said that we would happily have it back here. We wanted to wait until the consultation was finished.
Yeah.
And if it couldn't go to housing, then we would take it back into us. So I think that's our preference.
I think through you, Chair, that's probably just one thing that we'd say, that obviously with these directorate-based committees, the dates don't always match what's ongoing. There's obviously, which you would be able to tell you with the local plan, the dates just aren't quite matching up. So it makes sense that if there's not a suitable housing scrutiny committee to send this report to, that it comes to Scrutiny Commission so that somewhere along the line, scrutiny's had some input in it and they're able to provide their comments.
Councillor Parsons.
Councillor Parsons, I wasn't able to attend the last Commission meeting, but I tried to get my comments appropriately fed into the room. So while we've got the opportunity, I just want to ask one question. I want to understand, during the consultation process, what it is we might see that will make us change the original document.
So the only thing for the meeting on the 10th of December, it was envisaged that the Planning and Regeneration Service would provide the Scrutiny Committee with an update of the consultation, because it was envisaged that the consultation would have ended by then. So the Scrutiny Committee would have had an update
that's
on
not
the question.
I'm not interested in the consultation. I'm interested to see what people say.
Yeah.
I'm interested to know the criteria by which, when we see something in that consultation, that will lead us to make a change. Because if we have consultation against the document, somebody might say something that's going to make us change the document. Mm. I'm trying to understand what it is that we're looking for that will make us make a change to the document.
Well, it's another way for councillors to feed into the scrutiny and into the process for the draft local plan, because obviously councillors will know that we've opened the consultation, so councillors in an individual capacity have had a chance to input into the consultation. It was also to provide Scrutiny Committee with the chance to get an update basically on the draft local plan.
I understand that. That's still sideways to my question.
I think we'll pick that up with the lead member, because I don't think it's something that Miss Anthony can answer for us.
It's another opportunity for scrutiny and for council just to be involved.
I understand
in
where you're trying to get to
comments.
I just don't think we've got the person in the room that can answer what you're asking.
I don't know, Richard, if you've got anything else to add, just in terms of...
I'm not sure I followed the question, though.
I think I understand what you're asking for. I think it's a case of... Councillor Parsons wants to know, obviously, we're going to get the consultation back from the general public.
Yeah.
And he wants to know what feedback are we going to get from them that is going to make Cabinet make them change their mind.
It depends what they say. If there's maybe a lot, I mean, obviously Rich will correct me if I'm wrong, but if there's a large remit of residents who all live in one area who say this is this is not what we want, or people propose ideas, it's just
through you, Chair, if I may, it may be something that members pick up from the report's consultation, which is either factually incorrect. You're the eyes and ears on the patch. You know what's going on in your areas, and you challenge the factual correctness of the document. But there also might be, officers may have suggested that we respond in a particular way to consultation responses, and you may feel there are alternative ways that have either been missed or could have been considered, which might have led to a different outcome. So it might be that kind of thing that you want to look at.
Does that help answer your question?
Well, the factual correctness is fine. That's one that I would expect. If there's factual errors, then that's fine. I struggle to grasp that we don't have some criteria we're looking for in responses. So if somebody writes back saying one blade of grass is wrong, that's a scale we wouldn't worry about. Someone writes back and says five football fields are wrong, that's a scale we would worry about. I think there must be criteria as we look at the responses to have a sense of the sorts of things we're looking for which would generate change, which would warrant us generating change. If it's just scale of responses, then residents can coordinate their efforts to scale responses. If that's what's going to change it, if it's just a scale of response, residents can coordinate their approach to scale their response. But I'm keen to understand what it is we're looking for to generate change, because otherwise I have no sense. When we see the consultation, we see the document that's going to go to cabinet, why is that in and why is that not?
Where's
the framework
that
by which
I,
that
I
decision
just,
was made?
This isn't on our agenda for tonight, so I think that I think
it's
something we
was an opportunity to
potentially pick up with the lead member.
I'm just going to suggest for you, Chair, that perhaps what Councillor Parsons is looking for is a sort of a terms of engagement for the committee on the report of consultation. That'd be right. So you've got a sort of an understanding of how superficial or otherwise you want to go into the document.
I'm just keen what generates change.
I think it depends surely what responses we get and what they say.
It does to a degree.
And then I'd imagine Richard and the team can look at the responses and maybe say this is things that we can change, or this is things that we can't change, or this is possible or not. I think we've just got to wait and see what people say.
Actually, I very much sympathise with the question of Councillor Parsons, because it is confusing. You see, the entire process is confusing. Let's suppose actually we just go to the Parish Council and we discuss actually a few matters and we put them down actually as a response to the consultation. And who makes the final decision? On what criteria? It is a very reasonable question.
It's coming back to us for scrutiny. Like, so obviously at the time it comes back to us, we can scrutinise all of this, the consultation, what decisions have been made based on the consultation. We'll have the opportunity to scrutinise it at that point. Councillor Draycott.
Yes, Chair. If I'm correct, what we're having now is a consultation, but we end up at some stage where we have a full council meeting with the final document in front of us.
Ultimately down the line, Councillor Draycott, that's correct.
Yeah, and that's when members can actually move and second and change things if they were minded to.
technically, yes. So the way the process works is we're out for consultation at the moment.
Yeah.
We receive comments back from people over a 6-week period, and then officers will write up a report of consultation. This is what people said, and this is what our proposed response is to it, and how we will change the plan accordingly. That's the report of consultation. And that's what we're proposing to bring back to you, what we were on the 10th of December, but now we're talking about moving it back to give us a chance to write that report. Once that report's been prepared, officers will then go away and prepare the final version of the plan to submit to the Secretary of State. then there'll be consultation on that again, and those consultation responses will go, they won't come to us, they'll go directly to the Planning Inspectorate as part of the examination process. The inspector examines the plan to see if it is sound or whether it could be made sound with modifications. And then at that stage, it comes back to the Cabinet to refer it to Council for approval.
Yeah.
And technically, yes, Council could say, no, we're not going to approve it.
Yeah.
Or we'll only approve it if, in fact, I don't think you can approve it. I don't think you can make changes to it. I think you either approve it or you don't.
And this can take quite a while, can't it?
So we're about sort of 18 months, 2 years for that process to run.
Yeah.
Councillor Bolton?
I also support what Councillor Parsons has said. I have residents coming to me now already and saying, is there any point in us commenting on this? Will any notice be taken of what we say? should we be commenting on this as individual residents, or should we get a group of people together and get 100 responses coming in? I don't know the answers to those questions.
Well, I would say if there's a consultation and someone has a comment that they want to make, the answer is always yes. Whether they want to work in a group or not, obviously if everyone is all of the same opinion on something, then yes, strength in numbers of one opinion obviously is a benefit. But if someone's asking whether they should feed into a consultation, I would definitely always say yes to that.
Councillor Parsons, again, I think that's fine. I don't disagree with some of the peripheral comments that have been made. I think the point is, if we know the rules of the game, then we know how to respond. If we don't know the rules of the game by which it's being judged, we don't know how to respond, and neither do our residents. So we might go down this route in our response, and that's not a route that's going to generate change. Whereas, had they gone down this route, that's a route that would generate change. I have a vast array of residents, as does everybody else around here, who, for this document, is crucial. And we have two or three particular pressures around this document. And residents will be coordinating responses. But if we don't know the rules of the game, we're wasting their time. And I'm not going to waste residents' time. So we're wasting their time by not knowing the rules of engagement. If I know these are the six biggest criteria which might generate change, residents can play by the rules.
I think that's something that you can pick up directly with the lead member.
Okay.
I think it's. I understand why you're trying to get to that, but I just don't think we've got the right people in the room to answer that today.
No, that's absolutely fine.
It's just really about whether the committee, you know, want to be kept updated with the process, whether you want to see the consultation, the report about the consultation responses that comes from the head of planning, and whether you want to have that bit, you know, just a bit more input into it, really.
Yeah.
But also, I'm going to speak against this, even though I don't actually quite agree that way. I think it would be useful to know exactly how we can affect any change. I agree with that. But you wouldn't want to set terms that constrain the consultation.
No.
Because that would not make sense either. No.
What's the sort of the majority view then? You putting it on?
That we're concentrating on the consultation and we look forward to the results of the consultation coming back
we'll
in
see it
January.
In the January.
You want to see it in January?
Yes.
Thank you.
Yeah.
After all that, the answer is yes.
That's all I want. I want a nice, easy answer. Right, that's the only thing we're going to bring up about the scrutiny work programmes for the directorate committees. Has anybody got anything else they want to add on those? No? Richard, anything else? Yappy?
Brilliant. Thank you, Richard.
Thank you.
Those are item 12, Commission Work Programme.
Yep, so obviously this lines out the agenda items for you as a scrutiny committee in terms of what you've got planning. You have your regular items, which will be the scrutiny work programme and the cabinet responses, any progress with panel work. We've already got an item listed for December, which is a private sector licensing, but if we go to page 107, you'll look at what the key decisions are that are up and coming. So this is now an opportunity for the Commission to add any other items they want to their work programme.
One of the things that we needed to add in was the budget scrutiny panel report.
Yes, so in January the Scrutiny Commission will get an update from the Budget Scrutiny Panel on all the work they've completed so far and what their recommendations are. So we'll add that on for the Commission to have a look at.
Councillor Draycott?
Yes, thank you, Chair. And wasn't there also the corporate
plan?
There
was indeed, yes.
And can I also ask to go on the work programme is the Council's air quality strategy.
Yeah.
As a report, we discussed it at the last meeting, but thought in the first instance we'd have a report and see whether there was a need for a panel. So if that could be added in the new year, please, Chair.
Any other comments?
So if I just let the committee know, so obviously for the December cabinet, we've got the private sector licensing scheme, which you've already added to your work programme. There is also the homelessness and rough sleepers strategy, so I don't know if the committee are minded that they want to look at that one.
Yeah, I would like to see that.
Too.
Yeah.
Yep, so should we provisionally add that?
Yeah, please.
Okay, so that's the homelessness. And then we've also got the draft capital plan. And we've also got Charnwood Grants, which has come round again.
Charnwood Grants we don't need to see.
No, I think the committee have seen it quite a few times now.
Yeah. And what do you say, the one with capital plan?
Yeah, and yeah, then we've got the draft general fund as well. And HRA budgets.
Views?
Just the homelessness one then?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
No? Yeah, that's fine. I'll get those added on for you. Is there anything else anybody wants to get added to the work programme? No, not enough for now.
Thank you. So if we move on to item 13, so we've got an exempt item for 13.
Yeah.
So it's recommended that members of the public be excluded from the meeting during the consideration of this item on the grounds that it involves the likely disclosure of exempt information as defined in paragraph 3 of part 1 of Schedule 12A to the Local Government Act 1972. And the public interest in maintaining the exemption outweighs the public interest of disclosing the information. The information in the report refers to commercially sensitive information in respect of a significant land disposal. Are we all happy to move into?
Agreed.
Yep.
Agreed.
So, yep. Thank you. Okay, so item 13. Just want to give the recommendation, so we're happy to recommend this report to Cabinet. Thank you.
Thank you.